Okay, so there's a couple different resources you should know about in terms of Lubavitch Haggadahs. And most of what we're going to say today is from this Kol Menachem Haggadah. This is the Nusach HaRizal version. There's a couple different Nuschaos, so the page numbers might not be the same in all the editions. Lubavitch Rebbe encouraged people, especially children, to really connect deeply to the Haggadah. And we know the whole Inyan of Pesach is Chayav Adam Liros Es Atzmo Kilu Hu Yatzim Mitzrayim. So in 1987, Lubavitch Rebbe said that every child, boy and girl, should have their own illustrated Haggadah. So that way every person can connect to it in their own way. And there's Baruch Hashem, I think there's like 3,000 Haggadahs in the world today, maybe 3,500 Haggadahs in the world today, which is unbelievable. And there's something for everyone. Mamish, something for everyone. But the Lubavitch Rebbe said it's important that a person finds a way to connect very deeply to the Haggadah. Most of the things in this Haggadah were not things that the Lubavitch Rebbe said at the Seder. The Rebbe Kemat didn't interrupt during the Seder, like many Gedolah, many Tzaddikim. They went through the Haggadah, not adding any commentary, basically just going through the Maggid. But the Rebbe, from 1951 to 1970, on the second night of Pesach, he used to have a Fabrengen. Starting at about 1:30 in the morning, after everyone finished their Seder, and lastly till about 4 in the morning, which is pretty unbelievable. And then imagine Shachris was a little later the next day. But it was unbelievable. And from 1957 on, Rebbe used to not only share shorter insights, but he would give a mimer. He would say over a mimer, which is a more formal Hasidic discourse, which is unbelievable. And then the Hasidim would dance him home at 4 in the morning to different Nagunim from the Yom Tov of Pesach. In 1946, before the Rebbe was Rebbe, he published this. This is called the Haggadah Shel Pesach in Lukutei Tamim Umenhagim, which is really just an anthology, a collection of, or so it looks, it appears to be just a collection of things from Rishonim and Achronim and from the previous rabbis, short insights, very, very short insights. There's a lot of depth and a lot of work went into putting this together. It's not a Pashut thing at all. It looks very simplistic in terms of the way it was written, but the Rebbe spent an unbelievable amount of time figuring out what to put in, what not to put in, to put in certain classic things, to put in certain new things. And this is a very useful resource that many Gedolim said. This was they praised it and they said it was an amazing thing. So that's the Lekutei Tamim Menhagim from the Rebbe. And then I also have at home, I brought in the Haggadah Shel Pesach, Heichal Menachem from the Rebbe, which is also, it's a combination of this with some other longer insights, but it's not everything that's found in the Kol Menachem Haggadah. Okay, so let's go through this, the Gutnik edition, the Slager edition. It looks like the Gutnik Chumash. Okay, and we'll do some of the best, in my opinion, some of my favorite insights. No such thing as best. They're all beautiful insights, but some of my favorites from the first 80 pages or so. Okay, and we'll see how far we can get before the Mashpia comes to speak to us. Okay, the Rebbe said on Kaddish a very interesting thing. We know from the Gemara Megillah tells us on Daf Vav, that there's an inyan of being somech gula legeula. What does it mean to be somech gula legeula? It means that if we have a double Adar, when do we celebrate Purim? In the second Adar. Why do we celebrate Purim in the second Adar? Why not the first Adar? Because we want that Purim should be lined up right next to Pesach. I told you, remember Rashi says in Maseches Tanis and Daf Chav Tes, Mishenichlas Adar, Marvin Besimcha. If you remember, Rashi says what? Rashi says, Mishenichlas Adar, Marvin Besimcha. That's a reference to what? Rashi says, you make Purim u'Pesach. So you see that Rashi's hinting that Adar is the beginning of a process, and there's a link, a very powerful link that exists between Adar and Nisan. To be somech geula legeula, the geula of Purim to the geula of Pesach. And there are many, many connections that are found in different Svarim showing the link between Adar and Nisan. So for example, you know the Gemara says, what's the Gemara's example of Mishnechlas Adar Marim Besimcha? If you have a court case with a Gentile, you should go in the month of Adar. The Poskim say that's true in Nisan also. It carries over to Chodesh Nisan. There's a very strong link between very different types of geula. The geula of Pesach and the geula of Purim are very different, but they're both periods of geula. So the Rebbe said, it's a gevaldik part. The Rebbe said on a sicha that he gave on the second night of Pesach in 1965, about 15 years into his nesius after he became Rebbe. The Rebbe said, why do we start the Pesach Seder with Kaddish? Why do we start with Kaddish? So say, what do you mean? We always start with Kiddush. Yeah, but Kaddish is different. Normally, when you make Kiddush, one person can make Kiddush, and that person drinks the wine, and not every person has to drink their own cup of wine.
The Rebbe said, Kaddish at the Seder, there's two differences. First of all, every person has to drink their own cup of wine. That's Aleph. And Beis, the Dafka has to be wine. On Shabbos, if you don't have wine, you can make Kiddush on bread. At the Seder, there's Dafka and Inyan of drinking wine. And not that one person makes Kiddush for everyone else, but every person drinks the four cups of wine. So the Rebbe says that opening act of the Seder links us back to Purim. That Purim is the Yom Tov of Shtiyas Hayayin, of Chayiv Inish L'Besumei B'Puria, a person has to get drunk on Purim. So too the Rebbe said, the link that's established between Purim and Pesach begins with Kaddish. That just like there's an Inyan to drink on Purim, there's Mamash an Inyan, not just that we should make Kiddush. If you should make Kiddush, make Kiddush on bread. You make Kiddush on the matzah. If it's an Inyan of Kiddush, so let the Baal HaBayis make Kiddush for everyone. Why does everyone need their own cup of wine? So the Rebbe said it's establishing a link between Purim and Pesach. It's the drinking of Megillah Dav Zayin, Chayiv Inish L'Besumei B'Puria, as being connected to what? To the drinking of wine on Pesach. It's a beautiful, again, just another insight into how Purim and Pesach are so deeply linked. That the opening act of Pesach, of the Seder, has to be something which resonates with us and reminds us of Purim. That there's going to be a lot of drinking on this night, just like there's a lot of drinking on Purim. I told you on Sunday, the Netziv said that the reason Chazal instituted four cups of wine and not four other things, connected to four Lashonos of Gula, is because when a person drinks wine, he mamish goes through a transformation. The way you feel after one cup of wine is different than the way you feel after two cups of wine, after three cups of wine, after four cups of wine. Not that we're trying to get drunk at the Seder. There's no Indian of getting drunk, but a person drinks a lot of wine at the Seder. And therefore, it's a link that takes us back to the world of Purim. Okay? That's Aleph. Okay? Kadesh Orchatz Karpas. So the Rebbe has a beautiful vart, a beautiful insight into Karpas. The Karpas, we know, right, is dipped. So the Rebbe says, Al Pi Kabbalah, the Indian of dipping, already you see it in Rishonim. The Indian of dipping, what's the Hebrew word for dipping? To dip. Tibul. Yeah? Tibul means to dip. Right? To be tovel in the mikvah. Tibul. Tas yod beis vav lamed. The tzaddikim explain, based on Pnimius HaTorah, that the same letters of tibul as the letters bittul. What's the connection between tibul and bittul? Rishonim already say, when a person goes into a mikvah, you enter into an environment where you're mevatel yourself. You go into a place where you can't survive. Under the water, you can't live. So you're negating your life, so to speak. It's almost like suicide's a weird way to describe it, but you're putting yourself in an environment where you can't survive, and then you come out of the mikvah and you take that breath of air and you're born again. So tibul has an element of bittul to it. So the Rebbe said, think about it. You take your french fries and you dip it in ketchup. Yeah? So what's being mevatel itself to what? The french fry is being mevatel itself to the ketchup. That wasn't the Rebbe's example, that's my example. Yeah? You take a french fry, you dip it in ketchup. The french fry is surrendering a little bit of its taste to allow what? To allow the taste of the ketchup to be more dominant. It's surrendering itself to give way to the flavoring agent, namely the ketchup. So the Rebbe said, but what's strange is, if the food is being mevatel itself, yeah? Again, when you dip it into something else, the flavor of the something else is going to be dominant now. So the food is surrendering its independent taste to take on a new taste as an element of bittul. You hear what I'm saying? It's mevatel itself in order to take on the flavor of something else. But says the Rebbe, what's strange about it is mitzad the person, it's the very opposite of bittul. A person who's mevatel himself says, I don't need dips. I don't need fancy spreads. I'm a simple person. So on the one hand, the food item is being mevatel itself to some other flavor. But the person who says, I can only eat this if I have the right sauce, I can't even eat without ketchup, I can't eat without dips, right? That person is a person who's focusing on himself. He wants more and more pleasure. He wants to enjoy the food more and more. It's the opposite of bittul. Right? So on the one hand, the food is surrendering its flavor. On the other hand, the person is trying to, you know, get more of a geschmack, more of an experience. He wants more flavor. He wants different flavors. He's a person of taiva, and a person maybe of gaiva, because taiva and gaiva often go hand in hand. So the Rebbe said, when you come to Pesach and you're dipping that little piece of potato or parsley or whatever you use, remind yourself, right, that on the night of Pesach you got to throw yourself in also. Meaning, normally when a person dips, he's mevatel the food, but he's enhancing his physical pleasure. On the night of Pesach, the Rebbe said, in conjunction with all the themes of Pesach, of bittul. What's the bittul of Pesach? Why do we feel a sense of bittul on Pesach? Because first of all, we're on the 49th level of Tuma. I had no schus whatsoever. It's an unbelievably humbling experience that God would want to take us out of Mitzrayim. And the matzah, with its simplicity, is the ultimate paradigm of humility. So on a night where there's so much bittul, so much surrender, to be in the presence of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, right? Instead of just dipping the food and enhancing my pleasure, the Rebbe said, I'll read you it as printed here in the Haggadah here. So tonight, let us emulate the karpas and dip ourselves too. You have to remind yourself, I'm not dipping so that I can have greater pleasure. When I dip that little piece of potato or a little piece of parsley, I'm reminding myself, as we begin the Seder, that it's a night of surrendering oneself to God. And to recognize that without a Kodesh Baruch Hu's kindness to me, right, I never could have gotten out of Mitzrayim. And it's not just that the food should go through an experience of bittul, right? But like the Arizal explained, in the Kavanas HaMikvah, that the tibul is to bring a person to bittul. To bring the person to bittul. So when I dip that little piece of hadama, berei pri hadama, into the water, I'm trying to mavata myself. I'm trying to lessen my ego. I'm trying to realize that if not for Hashem, I couldn't do anything in this world. And that's a very fitting, the Rabbi said, that's a very fitting hakdama to the whole Seder, where a person surrenders himself to a Kodesh Baruch Hu, and he reflects on the kindness of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, and he eats the matzah with its simplicity. Right? The whole inyan of the simplistic food of Pesach, which we've corrupted in our times, needless to say. Now we try to figure out every which way to have more and more gashmias and more pleasure on Pesach, when the whole institution of Pesach was to create a simplistic approach to eating. And we work, unfortunately, Bezman Hazeh, a little bit against that. It's not a good thing, necessarily. Okay. Yachatz, you break the middle matzah. So the Rebbe said, matzah, and everyone talks about this, matzah, when you encounter the world of matzah, everyone knows that matzah has two very different components to it. On the one hand, matzah is lechem oni. On the one hand, matzah represents a person who's poor, a person who's simple, a person who doesn't have. And on the other hand, matzah is the food of geula. And the question is, how do you reconcile those two? The Rebbe said, when you get to Yachatz and you break the middle matzah, and you have a small piece and a big piece, the small piece represents the fact that I barely have anything, I'm a poor person, it's poor man's bread, and then I take the big piece from that same exact matzah, and I put it away for Afikomen, which has all of its, Kabbalistic undertones of Geula, the Afikomen, the hidden part, that which is yet to come. So the Rebbe asked a very simple question. How do you have one matzah? How is it possible to have a single thing that so strongly represents galus and suffering and hardship? And from that same matzah, the other piece, the other half of the matzah, the slightly larger half of the matzah, is mamish meramis to the deepest redemption. That's afikomen, you hide it away, you save it for the future. How do you have two opposite feelings coming from one matzah? Right, they wrote it here. How could a single piece of matzah harbor such a split personality? Like that lashon. Right? The matzah is meshugana. What are you? Are you humility? Are you bittul? Are you lechem oni? Are you geula? Are you Mashiach? What are you? So he explains, the Rebbe explained, based on an understanding of the life of the Baal Shem Tov. The Baal Shem Tov would often sign his letters, Yisrael from Akup, O-K-U-P. I don't think he wrote it in English. The Baal Shem Tov used to sign Yisrael from Akup. So the Rebbe said, there really is no place called Akup. The Rebbe was from, the Baal Shem Tov was from a town, from a Galician town called Tlust. Right, so what's Akup? So he said, Akup in Polish means trenches. Trench. The Baal Shem Tov used to sign his name, Yisrael from the trenches. So the Rebbe explained, Tlust, where the Baal Shem Tov was actually from, was originally a walled city. And at some point in the time of the Baal Shem Tov, I don't know, because of warring nations, whatever it was, the walls were destroyed, the city was completely overrun, and it left these huge trenches. And the Baal Shem Tov's parents, being the poor people that they were, mamish had nowhere to live, so they literally lived in the trenches. They mamish lived in these trenches. So when he would sign his name, Yisrael from the trenches. That was the Baal Shem Tov. So the Rebbe, in such a unique way, the Rebbe says, how could the Baal Shem Tov be someone who mamish lives in the dirt? He comes from a low trench, doesn't even have a normal roof over his head, and yet at the same time, Rabbi Yisrael Baal Shem Tov is the one who brings us to Mashiach. Chassidus is the Torah of Mashiach. So how can you have, like that matzah that has that split personality, on the one hand being so broken and so small and so simplistic, and at the same time being mamish geula. How could the Baal Shem Tov come out of the trenches? And the Rebbe quoted from the fifth Lubavitch Rebbe, the Rebbe Rav Shab, the Rebbe Rav Shab, Rav Shalom Dov Ber of Lubavitch, passed away in 1920. The Rebbe Rav Shab said, and I quote here in the English, from the Baal Shem Tov's trenches, we have been granted the strength to get out of all the other trenches, for the Baal Shem Tov's influence is unfaltering. And the Rebbe Rav Shab also reflected on this. Right? How could the Baal Shem Tov, who came from such a simplistic, low trench, have such a big hashpah in the world? How does such a person come from such a low place and make such a big difference? So the Rebbe Rashab said, from the Baal Shem Tov's trenches, we have the ability to get out of all of the trenches in history, because the Baal Shem Tov's influence is unfaltering. Right? From that little trench came such a hashpah in the world. So the Rebbe said, it's such an irony. How could it be that such a low, simple place could produce such a powerful kalach like the Baal Shem Tov? And the Rebbe said, it's really just a pasuk in Tehillim. Min ha-meitzar, karasika. That from the narrow straits, from the place where I feel trapped, that's where I'm able to expand. Mitzrayim, what does Mitzrayim mean? A meitzar, what's a meitzar? A border, feeling trapped. I was thinking when I read this piece, it's really exactly how HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world. There's a constriction, there's a tzimtzum. HaKadosh Baruch Hu took his infinite light and contracted it, and made it narrow and small. And then we go through this narrow strait, so to speak, the birth canal, which is also a narrow strait, and then the child emerges into the world out of its mother's womb, out of the mother's birth canal. Yeah. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu also contracted the whole world to create reality as we see it, as we know it today. And then from there, it'll expand outwards. U'malah ha'aretz de'as Hashem. Mashiach is a very expansive world. So the Baal Shem Tov came from a very uncomfortable place, from a trench. And Klal Yisrael went through a Mitzrayim, a Meitzar, where they felt trapped. But from that narrowness and from that constriction, and from that place where a Jew feels like he's got nowhere to go, right? Ironically, min ha-meitzar karasika, a Jew calls out to Hashem from that place, and the Rebbe said, this is mamish one of the secrets of all of Yiddishkeit, that poverty and redemption come from the same place. That you can have one matzah, which on the one hand is mamish lechem oni, the utmost in simplicity, mamish a trench, and at the same time, the other half of that same matzah is mamish the geula. And I think we all get this in our own lives. We understand. We understand that very often in life, if we're mature religious thinkers, we realize that the biggest struggles that we've had have made us into who we are. That we became great, we became bigger because of our suffering. I'll remind you of the vart that I told you from Rav Hirsch, Rav Shimshon Rafal Hirsch, on a pasuk in Tehillim. David HaMelech cries out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Tzaros Levavi Hirchivu, Tzaros Levavi Hirchivu, the pain of my heart is exploding. Tzaros Levavi, the pain of my heart, Hirchivu, is so expansive. I David HaMelech was pursued his whole life. Accused of not being a Jew, accused of not being a Melech, chased and sought after by his own children to kill him. What a broken life. Like Rabbi Nachman says, David HaMelech wrote Tehillim, and Nachman writes in Sichos Aran, that David HaMelech wrote Tehillim, crying himself to bed at night under the covers, because he felt so alone in the world. So David HaMelech says, Tzaros Levavi Yerchivu, the pain in my heart is so expansive, I'm ready to burst, Mimitsuko Sai Hotieni, take me out of my captivity, set me free. It's a cry. It's like many psukim in Tehillim. David HaMelech says, I'm suffering terribly, Hashem save me. Rav Shimshon Rafal Hirsch has a Chassidus Shavar. Rav Hirsch said, Tzaros Levavi, kama, Hirchivu. Or Tzaros, kama, Levavi, Hirchivu. Tzaros, my suffering, kama, Levavi, Hirchivu, have expanded my heart. I'm a bigger person because I went through things. A person who has a carefree life, an easy life, everything's handed to him on a silver platter. Right? Chazal even say it. Chazal say you're going to see greater success from poor children than rich children. Why? The rich children have the best education and the best tutors and the best food and the nicest clothing. But the kids who fought for it, a person who doesn't have it handed to him but fights for it and suffers to get there, a person who works on himself, who comes from a trench, is the type of person who can bring Mashiach. So the Baal Shem Tov came from a trench, and he's mamish the one who put Klal Yisrael on a new path towards the Geula Shlema. And that's the matzah. The matzah is lechem oni on the one hand, and mamish afikomen, the secret of the Geula, on the other hand. It's a gevaldik var. Yeah.
You might have removed this, but just to confirm, is that Mitzar, like,
Yeah, that is, yeah. That's exactly why it's called Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim is a Mitzar. Mitzrayim, a Jew felt, right? If someone puts their hands around your throat and strangles you, it's hard to cry. It's hard to scream out. You can't talk. You can't breathe. Right? Mitzrayim, so to speak, had a stranglehold on Klal Yisrael, which is why for a long time we couldn't cry. There's a lot of deep Torahs about that, getting our voice back in Mitzrayim. That's why the Svarim say, Paro is the osios ha'oref, which means the neck. Which means that they had their hands around their neck. Right? Paro is the osios para, negative speech. And the whole avodah of Pesach is to be able to speak again. Pesach, that the mouth should speak. The Arizal says, the Pesach is Pesach, a mouth that speaks. But again, to be able to even cry out, we have to set ourselves free. But from that place of feeling, you know, tied up, of feeling trapped, right? Min ha-metzar, karasika, that's where the gula comes from. And therefore, it's not by chance, says the Rebbe Rashab and says Lubavitch Rebbe, that out of that Meitzar, called the trenches of Akkup, came a tzaddik like Rebbe Yisrael Baal Shem. It's Chusay again Aleinu. It's from Akkup. It's from a trench.
That's what the
Rebbe said. The Rebbe says Akkup never existed. He said he was from Tlust. But Akkup in Polish means trench. Tlust was a town in somewhere in the Galician region of the world. I don't know. Also a small place. Akkup? I don't know. But the Rebbe understood that when the Baal Shem Tov wrote Yisrael from Akkup, he meant a trench. Okay? All right, we're running out of time very quickly. Let's go to Manishtana. A simple vart from the Rebbe. The Rebbe says, why do kids ask Manishtana? Why is it the kids' obligation? The whole mitzvah of the night is Vigadat Levincha. It's an obligation of the parent to teach the child. Why should the child be the one to ask the questions of the parent? So the Rebbe writes in this volume that I showed you before, the Lakutei Tam and Minhagim, he brings a very simple explanation. He says, because when a kid gets up to say Manishtana, yeah? And he does it, let's say it's a really little kid, and the kid's been trying to learn the words, doesn't really know the words, can't remember the words, but the kid is standing there trying to say Manishtana, and the parents have the greatest joy in the world. Because when a parent looks at a child, there's a feeling of unconditional love for my child. So Lubav Trebi said, why does a child get up to say the Manishtana? Which is really, Halach Ma'anya, we don't have time for it now, the Rebbe explains, Halach Ma'anya is really not part of the Magid. Manishtana is really where the Magid begins, where the story begins. So the Rebbe said, because when a child is, you know, doing anything in front of its parent, and we saw this in Kedushas Levi also, when a kid does anything, the parents say, wow, my kid's amazing. Right? The kid can walk, wow. The kid can go to the bathroom by himself, wow. The kid can say Aleph Beis, wow. Right? Not such major accomplishments. For an adult, those are rather simplistic accomplishments. But when a child does something, the parent feels this unbelievable, unconditional love for the child. So we begin the Seder, says the Rebbe, by reminding the Kadosh Baruch Hu that we're his children. And as his children, he has to have unconditional love for us. And the Rebbe quoted the Pasuk in Hosea, in Parakut Aleph. The Pasuk in Hosea says, Ki na'ar Yisrael, the Jewish people are like a na'ar, like a child, ve'ohavehu. And therefore, how could you not love us? A child is so easy to love. Adults are difficult to love. But children are very easy to love. And therefore the Pasuk says, Ki na'ar Yisrael ve'ohavehu, the Jewish people are like a child, and therefore Hashem says, I love them. Umi Mitzrayim karasi libni. So this pasuk in the 11th parak of Hosea is really what we're trying to tap into as we begin the Seder. The pasuk is in Hosea, parak Yud Aleph, pasuk Aleph. Ki na'ar Yisrael ve'ohaveyu. The Jewish people are a na'ar, a child. And therefore, ohaveyu. Hashem says it's so easy to love them. So we remind Hashem of that unconditional love that He has for us as we start the Seder by asking a child to lead the way. Discuss the children. The Rebbe used to talk a lot. The Rebbe had tremendous belief in children. The Rebbe was unbelievable in terms of emphasizing that children should learn Chassidus and that children are the ones who are going to bring the Geula. The Rebbe put a tremendous amount of effort into making materials and making sure that proper education are addressing the children of our world today. Like I told you at the beginning, 1987, the Rebbe said every kid needs his own colorful, illustrated Haggadah. Why? It's the parents' job to teach the kids. Why does the kid need a Haggadah? Why does the kid start the Seder with Manishtana? But the answer is it reminds HaKadosh Baruch Hu of the unconditional love that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has for us. Okay, Manishtana. How many nights do we say Manishtana? If you live in Chutz La'aretz, we have two Siddur. We have a Seder back-to-back nights. So how many times do you ask the Manishtana? Two nights in a row. So it's a very Lubavitch Rebbe style question. Why do I need to ask the questions the second night? I already asked them last night.
you asked them and answered the questions last night, so why are we asking the questions again? And it's part of something we spoke about last year in one of the Pesach Shirim, right? That as much as Pesach is a night of Amunah, it's also a night of questions. And the Lubavitcher Rebbe said, it's important for us to realize as Jews, we make fun of this sometimes, but the Rebbe said it's true, it's mamash true. That as Jews, the questions are really important to us. Why do we learn Gemara? Just learn Shulchan Aruch. Just give me the answers. Why do I need all the questions? Why do I need the discussion? Why do I need the back and forth? The Lubavitcher Rebbe said, as Jews, the questions and all of our incorrect presumptions leading to the answers are very much a part of the answer. And therefore the Rebbe said it's important, even after we've answered the questions, to always chazer over the questions. We learn as much from the questions as we do from the answers. And therefore, just because we asked the questions last night, doesn't mean that we're not going to ask them again. The Rebbe said, in Judaism, questions are as much a part of the text as the answers themselves, that they must be repeatedly studied and emphasized. We don't shy away from questions. You meet a Rebbe who says, we don't ask those types of questions, run away from such a Rebbe. We always ask questions. We don't always have answers. It's okay not to have all the answers. Right? When Mashiach comes, we'll have all the answers. Take them. The Gemara says sometimes, take them. We don't know the answer. Tishbi yotari it's kushos v'abayos. Eliyahu will answer. Eliyahu Tishbi will answer up the questions. We don't have all the answers. But a Jew's not afraid of a question, and a Jew understands that a good question, right, as already one of the early Kadmonim said, right, that a good question is already half the answer. We value the questions in Yiddishkeit. There are religions that say, don't ask questions, just blind faith. Yiddishkeit's not a religion of blind faith. We value questions. We chazer over the questions. The Havaminas of the Gemara. Tzaddikim say the Havaminas of the Gemara also holy. For example, the Gemara has a Havamina that maybe you could read the Megillah on the 16th and 17th. And the Gemara says, no, the days for reading the Megillah are 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. But there are many tzaddikim who wrote about the 16th and 17th and spoke about how the 16th and 17th are still holy days connected to Purim. Why? It was rejected by the Gemara. But we had a Havamina that Purim has a Shaychus to 16 and 17. So the fact that we had a Havamina, the 16th and 17th of Adar are holy days, that itself makes them holy days. The questions, the Havaminas also have Kedusha. We're not only interested in answers. We appreciate the process as Jews. That's a very chashuv thing. And it's an important aspect of being a growing Jew. Not to only want answers, but to value and to appreciate the questions along the way. Okay, we go deeper into the Agada, and we get to the four sons. Now, the Rebbe has a very beautiful piece, which I want to give a shiur later, as we get closer to Pesach Chan, about the fifth son. The Rebbe spoke about a fifth son who doesn't come to the Seder. There's a lot to talk about there. I want to make a separate shiur out of that. We'll deal with that maybe another time. Okay, but the four sons, the Rebbe, being a person who loves all Jews and believes in all Jews, the Rebbe says, where do we learn the four sons from? Where do these four sons come from? These four sons that are referenced in the Haggadah. Baruch HaMakom, Baruch Hu, Baruch Shnas Torah L'Am Yisrael, Baruch Hu, K'neged Arba Banim Dibur Torah. Echad Chacham, Echad Rasha, Echad Tam, Echad Sheni Yodei Elisha. The Rebbe says, K'neged Arba Banim Dibur Torah. There are four different passages in the Torah, three in Shemos, one in Devarim, that talk about Vigadat HaLevincha, in some capacity having a conversation between a parent and a child. And those four passages in the Torah allude to four different sons. Four different types of sons, four different types of questions, four different ways, right, that we present the story of Mitzrayim to our children. So the Rebbe said, first of all, if all four sons are mentioned in the Haggadah, that already means that we have to believe in all four sons. But more than that, the Rebbe said that all four sons are rooted in Pesukim in the Torah. Chevra, we've mentioned in the past, is the Pasuk Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, more important than the Pasuk that says that Timna was the Pelegesh of Eliphaz, the son of Esav? The answer is no. Every letter of Torah is Kodesh Kedashim. And therefore, if you're missing one letter of the word Amalek in the Torah, if the Ayin of Amalek is not properly written in the Torah is Pasul. So you'll say, what? So I can live without an Ayin of Amalek. I want to erase Amalek anyways. What difference does it make? Every letter of the Torah has to be accounted for. Which means that there are letters in the Torah that correspond to who? To the Rasha. And correspond to the Tam. And correspond to the She'ena Yodei Elishal. And we're not only interested in the Chacham, but all four children are crucial to the Jewish people, and that's why they became Torah. There's a lot to learn from the Rasha. Right? And we don't give up on the Rasha. We believe in the Rasha. Again, the Rebbe has this fifth son, which we'll talk about. Right? But of these four sons, the Rebbe says, the Avodah is to what? Is to believe that each one of them is blessed in their own way. Why? He's a Rasha. Forget him. No. The Rebbe says, what do we say right before the Dalet Barim, we say Baruch, 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 Baruch. We say the word Baruch four times. Baruch HaMakom, Baruch Hu, Baruch Shanasan, Baruch Hu. Four times we say the word Baruch. So the Rebbe said, the avoda of a parent is to look at one's children, whether your child's a Chacham, a Rasha, a Tam, any of the Elishol, or a combination of all of them, which we all are. And the Rebbe says each person has to try to recognize the bracha in that Yid, to try to bring bracha to that Jew, and to try to help that Jew, each person on their own level, to recognize the oneness of Hashem. And that's why the Rebbe said, how does it reference the children? It says, Echad Chacham, Echad Rasha, Echad Tam, Echad She'eni Yedei Elishol. Why does it say Echad four times? It says Baruch four times, and it says Echad four times. It says Echad four times. First of all, what's the gematria of Echad times four? The Rebbe doesn't say this, but Tzaddikim say this. What's Echad times four? How much is Echad in gematria? 13. So what's Echad times four?
52
is gematria Ben. That's gematria son. Right, so Echad this, Echad that. Four sons. As far as I'm talk about that. But the Rebbe said, what's the bracha that we're trying to bring to each of these four sons? Baruch, 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 Baruch. The bracha is what? Echad. Echad, Chacham. What do I want from the Chacham? I want him to know that what? I want him to become God aware of the One. I want him to know that. Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. The Chacham, I want him to know Echad. The Rasha, I want him to know Echad. The Tam, I want him to know Echad. The Shein Yedei Elishol, I want him to know Echad. I want each of these children to see the bracha and to be the recipient of the bracha of having a sheiches to the One above. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu believes in each of these four sons. And therefore, the Rebbe says they're part of Torah. You can't discredit them. Right? The Chacham and the Rasha actually sit next to each other at the Seder, right? Echad Chacham, Echad Rasha. The Rebbe says, why are they next to each other? Why is the Chacham next to the Rasha? Before I answer that question, I want to tell you another Vart from the Rebbe Rayatz, from the 6th Lubavitcher. Again, in this Sefer, the Likutei Tamim Munhagim, there's a famous Vart from the Rebbe Rayatz, the 6th Rebbe, because by each of the sons, as they make their comment, it says, Chacham Mahu Omer. Right? What does the Chacham say? Rasha Mahu Omer. Tam, Mahu Omer. Each one, right? Mahu Omer, what does he say? So the Rebbe Rayat said, no, that's not how to read it. Chacham, Chacham, Mahu Omer. Mahu, what he is, Omer, he says. You learn a lot about a person when you listen to the way that they speak. The Rebbe Rayat said, Remez, Ha'oda Mahu Umahuso, Humegale Be'amiraso. The way a person talks, right? If you're a good listener and you listen to the way people talk, very often you can hear what they're really saying. So the Chacham, Mahu, what he is, Omer, it's very similar to what other tzaddikim say. I think the Rebbe Rayatz also said it about Pirkei Avos. What's the phrase we always find in Pirkei Avos? Hu Haya Omer. Right? Hu Haya Omer, the Pashup Shad is, he used to say. But the Rebbe Rayatz said, no, Hu Haya, he was it, and therefore Omer, that's what he said. The way a person talks says a lot about who they are. The types of things you talk about. Right? And the language that a person uses says a lot. It reveals a lot about the type of person that you are. So Chacham Mahu, the Chacham what he is, Omer, is expressed through his speech. And the Rasha also. It's very important because the Chacham and the Rasha seem to ask almost identical questions. The difference between them is their tone, is their attitude. And you can hear it in their voice. The Chacham says, what is all this? I want to learn. And the Rasha says in a nasty and scornful way, what is all this? Right? They're saying the same words. But one's asking because he wants to understand, and the Chacham, and the Rasha rather, wants to just poke fun, wants to just ridicule, making fun of the whole thing. The Rebbe asks, why is the Rasha next to the Chacham, and why is the She'enu Yedei Elishol last on the list? Let's assume that they're in some type of order from best to worst. So first of all, why is the Chacham next to the Rasha? Why is the Rasha not last on the list? Two different questions. I'm asking two different questions. Chacham and Rasha, why are they partners? Why are they neighbors? And why is the She'eni Yodei Elishol last on the list, as if to say he's the worst? So the Rebbe first said, you need to know a mistake people make when it comes to Jewish outreach. People think, and the Rebbe almost said the opposite on another occasion, people think, because the Rebbe would encourage you, if you know anything, go teach it to someone else. Right? We have that in that book. If you know Aleph, go teach Aleph. If you know Beis, go teach Beis. But the Rebbe said, to have a hashpah on the Rasha, you don't need to be such a Chacham. And the Rebbe said, it's not true. People make a mistake sometimes and think, because I know a little bit more than someone else, so now I can become a big mashpi on them. And the Rebbe said, it's not true. To really transform someone else, it's not with cheap Kiruv techniques. It's being a chacham. It's being a person who's mamish, illuminated. Your neshama is so illuminated that you can shine into a deep and low place. The bigger a person is, he quotes from the Torah Ur, from the Baal Tanya, right? The higher a person is, the lower down he can reach. But you got to be a big light if you want to reach out to low people. So the Rasha, yes, the Rasha needs to sit next to the chacham. A true chacham, a person of tremendous soulful illumination, can have a hashpah on the Rasha. Right? And a person has to be careful not to think that, oh yeah, you know, I'm gonna change this person using, and then you see, people catch on. There are people who are involved in Kiruv and they use very cheap techniques. There's actually a shira, I was on the front page of Yahu Torah the other day from Rabbi David Beshefkin, asking whether or not, you know, is Kiruv manipulative? And it is sometimes. Right? Mashpia talks about it all the time. You know, the guy who goes on the NCSY Shabbaton, more to Kiruv on the girls than on the guys. Right? It's true. But a person who wants to truly have a hashpah on someone else, you have to be a chacham, an emistik a chacham, and then you can mamish b'mashpia onto the Rasha. Why is the She'eni Yodei Alishol the last on the list? So the Rebbe said something very deep. And other people talk about it also. The Rebbe said the She'eni Yodei Alishol is the worst. You know why? Because the She'eni Yodei Alishol makes himself completely unreceptive to anything. What do you mean, She'eni Yodei Alishol? You can't even ask a question? You have nothing on your mind? It's the worst. You sit down with the She'eni Yodei Alishol. No, what's on your mind? What do you want to talk about? Nothing. Nothing? Nothing? You're not working on anything? Does your life have no value, no meaning? The Rebbe says apathy, the person who's ignorant and apathetic to learning, is mamish the worst. The Rush, the Rebbe says, is gevaldik. The Rush, all you have to do, right, he's an angry, passionate guy, you have to just learn how to redirect his energy. So the Chacham, who's a person of a great light, can reach into the low place of the Rasha, and mamish transform the Rasha. But the clueless son, the She'eni Yodei Alishol, the one who doesn't even know that he's missing something, that's the worst. That's mamish the worst. To become apathetic and to become just casual about your own ignorance is mamish the worst. Right? If you know that you don't know, then at least you can start to learn. Right? The Tom is simple, but I don't know so much, but I'm open to learning. The She'eni Yodei Alishol, the Rebbe said, is mamish the worst. Because when a person becomes totally unreceptive to learning new ideas, then it's kamat impossible. No matter how much of a hashpah, no matter how big of a tzaddik you are, or a chacham you are, they don't have a kli to receive. The Rebbe actually wrote later in the Haggadah, he says, that's also tzeyu lamad. Right? We say in the Haggadah, tzeyu lamad, go out and learn. So the Rebbe said, what's go out and learn? He said, people sometimes get so stuck in their viewpoint. They see things the way that they see things. They don't want to go out and learn new things. The Rebbe was a person who said, say, go out and learn. There's so much more to learn. But if you're going to be stuck in your way of seeing reality, if you're only going to see the world through your eyes, through the way that you understand things, then a person mamish gets stuck. Yeah? Yeah. Yeah.
Smaller,
correct.
Smaller,
bigger tzaddikim.
And second.
Just in a bigger Hashem, yeah.
The second answering question, something said, "Oh, zelu mazeh, adiakul meir shefta Torah." How? Also, it sounds serious. Sometimes it's very easy to misplace things like ahava and mirab. You have to rearrange.
Right.
Yeah,
redirect it.
There's to
correct, there's nothing to redirect. He's got no or. The Rasha at least is a big or. He's a Rasha, but he's a big person. He at least is passionate about something. Oh, he's passionate about Rishas, so we have to redirect him to become passionate about Yiddishkeit.
That's where he could be great if he knew how to redirect.
Yep. Okay, cover two final is Mashmir? Okay, two final thoughts. Okay, so two points. First of all, we know from the Mishnah in Pesachim, Mitchila ovdei avodazara hayavoseno. Right, maschil begnus. We start from the negative and we end with the positive. So we start off by saying originally our ancestors were idol worshippers. So 2 points from the Rebbe. 2 points from the Rebbe. Number one, first of all, maschil begnus. We start with the negative and we end with the positive. So the Rebbe said, you know what that means? How do we end Magid? We end Magid asking for Mashiach. So the Rebbe said, you know what Maschil Begnus u'Mesayim B'Shvach is? we start from the negative, we end with the positive. The Rebbe said, this whole geula called Yetzias Mitzrayim is the gnos. The whole thing is the gnos. I thought the gnos is, we started off talking about how we were slaves, and we were idol worshippers, and then we became from. I thought that's the transformation that's taking place in the beginning of the Haggadah to the end. So the Rebbe said, no, it's not true. The Rebbe said, this whole redemption, everything from the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim until today, is all gnos. Compared to what? Compared to the final geula. And therefore, all of Magid is mamash the gnos. When we get to the very end of the Magid, and we say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we hope that in the future, we'll be able to bring the Karban Pesach. We'll be able to celebrate Yerushalayim. Right? That redemption is the praise that we're longing for. But don't say, right, that the gnos was we started off as Shvach Yid and then we became good Jews. The Rebbe said, no, we can't rest on our laurels. We have to see this whole redemption as we have today. As mamash, the whole thing is gnos, but Amir Tzashem will be zochet to the true redemption, and that's the praise that we're trying to get to. Right? This is real. The God is reawakening us to appreciate the final geula. Oh, okay, shkach. So stop here.